Kev Fun Quail on it. Don't worry, I promise I won't touch the button. And remember, shoot anything that moves. Bye. Oh, God, this phone's never going to stop. Oval Office, W speaking. Yes? No, I do not want to be a guest on Ross Hemsworth's show now, that's weird. I spend my evenings on the Above Top Secret Forum, making up conspiracy theories. Now, about Project Serpo, if you could bring me up to speed on...
This guy really is born to be wild. I get this view of him sailing down the road on his Harley Davidson. You've probably seen him on things like 4T and TV and Bloody Towers. He is, in fact, president of ASAP and president of Bufora. He's also grand commander of one of the Knights Templar movements over here in the UK. Over 30 years' experience of first-hand investigations into anomalous phenomena. Can I welcome my first guest from South Wales this evening? It is the Reverend Lionel Fenthorpe. Lionel, good evening.
Good evening, Ross, and thank you for the invitation.
No problem at all. I've been looking forward to this hour for a long time.
I have too, and I hope we can keep our listeners interested while we talk about the mysteries that you and I both enjoy so much.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure we will. Lionel, first off, I've got to just say, it's been a little while since we've spoken. So start us off by telling us a little bit about what you've been doing recently, because we're going to do things backwards tonight. We're going to start with the beginning and then go back, start with the end rather, and go back to the beginning.
Right, well, the most recent book that I finished for my friends over at Dundurn in Toronto in Canada, it was on the mysteries and secrets of the Templars and the way that the Templar secrets may possibly, perhaps even probably, have been impinged upon the fact that Dan Brown gave us in the Da Vinci Code, because there are a lot of very interesting hidden historical truths in there, and Dan has shown us a few of them, rather like a conjurer doing one or two of his tricks. So anyway, my book on the Templars linked in with some of the things that Dan was lifting the lid on, and prior to that, I had been doing a book on the history and mystery of castles, and that had taken us all over the place. You very kindly mentioned the show. It came out under two names. One was Castles of Horror, and the other one was Bloody Towers, but it was the same show.
A fantastic show it was, too. I remember it well.
Thank you very much. And then I'm currently taking a lot of private students, and everything from postgrad down to GCSE youngsters, and 2 days a week I'm the Director of Media Studies at Cardiff Academy, which is one of our A-level colleges here in Cardiff. And I'm working my usual 18-hour day and getting a little bit of radio and television work in between my teaching and my writing. So
you haven't slowed down since the last time I spoke to you then?
Oh no. I never intend to slow down, I never intend to retire.
Right, first question I've got to ask you. Let's have a website address that my listeners can get on and have a look at while they're listening to you this evening.
Oh, that would be very kind of you. It's World Wide Web, and then just my name, Lionel-Fenthorpe. Not because I have any claims to being an aristocrat, but simply because somebody must have pinched my name without the hyphen.
Oh, right. And is that a .com or a .com?
And it's just .com, so it's World Wide Web. Lionel-Fenthorpe.com.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, do check that website, because there's an awful amount of information on there that will tell you all about what Lionel's been up to and where you can see Lionel appearing in the near future, hopefully, Lionel, if you still keep that page up to date.
Yeah, we try and keep it up to date, but it may need some additions at the moment, but we're very busy. We're around. We're doing lectures all over the place, and got booked up to do one in Norwich, in Norfolk, my old home ground, as far ahead as June of 2006.
Excellent. Oh, that's what I like to hear. Well, I'm starting to book mine for next year now. We're actually going out and doing the big Spiritual Tides event down at Detling in Maidstone for 4 days in March. There's about 3,000 different stalls, I think, down there of everything from New Age through to UFOs and paranormal. It's going to be a fantastic event, and we're broadcasting live for 4 days down there, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I think I've got the location right, Ross, but the minute you said Maidstone, when I was filming in London a few months ago, I came across a very interesting guy who was driving the studio car, and he knew that fellas like you and me are always interested in the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And he said, Lionel, may I tell you a story? about true event happened to me on the way to Maidstone. So this is the story as it was told to me by the driver of the studio car. He was driving down that way in a very thick fog, and from the side, I was particularly interested because, as you just said in the introduction, I'm a bike. He said, from out of the fog, a bike came fast, hit the side of his car. There was an almighty crack. He and his friend got out of the car, and there was actually a dent in the front wing. They looked everywhere for the biker whom they thought they'd injured or killed, and they couldn't find him. So, being decent and honourable citizens, they drove on to the nearest police station, which was in Maidstone, and they then went in and reported it to the officer behind the desk, the charge sergeant, who was taking details. And as he started to write it down, an older constable, looking a little bit like Dixon of Dark Green, came over to them and said, I wouldn't bother to write that if I were you, Sarge. I've been here for the last 15 years, and over that 15 years, this incident has been reported at least 7 times. On some of the reports, I went out to look. There was actually a motorcyclist killed in the area these gentlemen have described, and it seems to recur, and there's even physical damage. I can't explain that one, Ross. It's one of the strangest tales I've ever heard.
Funny enough, I've heard it as well. There was a lorry driver that reported much the same thing, and I think it was on the old A20 in Maidstone. Am I right? Was it on the old A20 in Maidstone?
It was on the old A20, as far as I'm aware.
Yep, that's exactly the same. I've heard a lorry driver say the same thing, that he was hit by a motorcyclist, got out of the cab, and when he got out, there was nothing there. But again, there was marks where the bike had hit the lorry, but absolutely nothing to be seen. How amazing is that?
It is astounding, and it's where the paranormal in the psychic sense seems to merge and blend with the physical universe that we're familiar with. And I think another strange event in this area are the things which, you know, you and I as professional investigators would call apports. I've only seen one of these in all the years I've been researching. I was with Yuri Geller and about 5 more of us, and we were exploring a house, a very old house with cellars going back to the 13th century, in Stonegate in York. And as we reached this particular room, a doorknob, a porcelain doorknob, Victorian type, but wasn't more than 200 years old at the most, just appeared in the middle of the floor and moved slightly. In the way that if you put a golf ball down on the green when you've lifted it out of the bunker and dropped it, it hadn't been thrown. It was as though some very deliberate and controlled force had laid it there. Now, I was right next to Yuri, and I know that he's a very skillful conjurer, as well as a very able and very honest man, and it was certainly nothing whatever to do with him. Yuri and I were equally mystified, and so were the other 5 people. Just a porcelain doorknob coming out of thin air on the floor of that room with 7 witnesses.
How amazing is that? Now, Yuri, I know, listens into the show whenever he gets the chance, and he's actually coming on as a guest himself in the new year at some point. So who knows, he may well
be
listening into it tonight.
Because I was in a restaurant with him the day we were filming, and he said, Lionel, you select the spoon and give it to me. And I did. I picked just an ordinary teaspoon from that table. It was completely at random. I watched like a hawk, and Yuri stroked it as gently as you would stroke the petal of a rose. And suddenly it keeled over. He signed it for me. I've got it in my china cabinet.
Excellent. Well, talking of signing things, my producer Penny here has just sent me a message across on the internal system here, and she said, I want one of Lionel's books, and I want it signed.
Please tell her I will be absolutely delighted if she has a little peep on the website and then just lets us know which one it is. I'll be delighted to, you know, to do one for her. Just choose from the list and I will be honoured to sign it for you.
You're an officer and a gentleman, sir. Now, I've got to ask you, Lionel, you're a reverend of the church. Now, I believe it's the Anglican Church, isn't it? How did a reverend from the Anglican Church get involved in the paranormal and UFOs?
Well, we've got to do that the other way around. As you said, Ross, at the beginning of the show, we're doing it back to front, starting with the here and the now and going back further into the past. Mm-hmm. And when I first started investigating the paranormal, I has nothing whatever to do with any church, Anglican, Methodist, Baptist, or anything else. And then I came to Cardiff in 1979 as the headmaster of a big inner-city comprehensive, or a comprehensive in a, shall we say, a necessitous area, and a player school called Glendara, when I was there for 11 years as their head. Now, one of the boys in my fifth year, extremely nice lad called Peter James, I can close my eyes and see Peter now as if it was yesterday, and he had a brother who was the manager of a factory, and shortly before Christmas, which makes it so much more poignant, Peter had gone to help in his brother's factory. He was riding on a forklift truck, and the driver had forgotten he was there, and the poor lad was killed in a terrible accident when they went under a doorway. Now, I felt that he was one of my students, and I needed... And, you know, when you're head of a school, your students are like your family, and I felt that I must go personally to see his family and just to say what a terrible sad thing it was and pay my respects to the boy. Now, I also felt that this was such an important, such a vital job that I could not just give that family polite platitudes that I didn't believe in. So I spent the whole of that day after Peter's accident thinking through what I was going to say to his family, the people who loved him and knew him. And at the end of the day, I realized I had to sort out my own mind, my own religious faith, my own philosophy, before I went to see them. And I suddenly realized that the Christian I had been as a young man was right, and the middle-aged cynic reaching for the levers of power and promotion was wrong. And I was probably the worst emissary that could have gone to those poor people. But I meant it from the heart when I said, I believe you will see your son again, tragic as this is. I'm sure that he's with God, he's in heaven, and he's okay, and you will see him again. And as I came away from meeting his bereaved family, I thought, well, maybe I ought to do a bit more about this. My chairman of governors was a local vicar. I went to see him. And I said, I'd like to come back to church, Jack. I haven't been in a church for about 20 years. And he, a very lovable Irishman, just opens both his arms as wide as he could, gives me a huge smile and says, come and read the lesson tomorrow. And I did. And from there, I joined the church and trained as a priest, and I'm an ordained Anglican priest. But
and quite an unconventional one, I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you, Ross. I should hate to be conventional, my brother.
Well, we started the show this evening with Born to be Wild by Steppenwolf, because as I said to the listeners on the introduction, I just get this vision of you sailing down the motorway on that big Harley Davidson of yours.
That's it. Yep. Absolutely. And wild I certainly am, and I intend to remain. But underneath the wildness, there is a sincere Christian faith. And again, I don't find any kind of problem with being both a Christian priest and an open-minded, honest investigator into the kind of paranormal things which you and I and our listeners are intrigued by. And I feel it's all God's universe. And if one man chooses to do an experiment with, shall we say, hydrochloric acid and some alkali on a bench in a chemistry lab and produces a result that can be written down, and another man will like the investigation that you are going to do and the many other investigations that you've done. If guys like you and me choose to go to an allegedly haunted site and to take with us the necessary scientific equipment to see what we can find, then we are doing neither more nor less than the research chemist or the research physicist or a research biologist. And so for me, it's all God's universe, and I think he put the mysteries there so that people like us and our listeners and enjoy them.
I think that's exactly right. And I have to say, it's a very fresh approach, because having dealt with different people from the church over many, many years, I have very mixed feelings about the church. But we'll go into that in just a second. We're going to take a short break now. And just before we do, if you want to send an email in for Lionel to answer, it's info@phantomorfraud.com. That's info@phantomorfraud.com. Or you can text the show on 85010. That's 85010. Type in the word studio, leave a space, and then your message. Penny will get that straight across to me, and we'll try and get that on air before the end of the first hour. We'll be back with Lionel right after these words.
You saw Blair Witch. You watch Most Haunted. Now live the experience with Haunting Breaks. It's another world. Do you see ghosts? Imagine the excitement of the unknown. Imagine searching for ghosts with a team of professional investigators and psychics. Join us in a paranormal investigation in some of the most haunted locations in the UK and abroad. We provide accommodation and everything else that's essential for the ultimate haunted break. You turn up and tune in to your inner self, and then expect the unexpected. Contact our friendly team on 01686 420 301 or email info@hauntingbreaks.co.uk. Or visit the website www.hauntingbreaks.co.uk. You won't be disappointed. Now that's weird. Do you believe in ghosts and spirits? Do you want to know more about spiritual and paranormal investigations and research? From a combination of investigators and writers comes a fresh magazine that focuses on these phenomena. This magazine is called The Ghost Advocate. Visit and subscribe to The Ghost Advocate today at www.ghostadvocate.com. Warning, this magazine may haunt you.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space itself and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. And it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area that we call... Now that's weird.
Email the show now. info@phantomorfraud.com. That's info@phantomorfraud.com. Or if you're in the UK, text 85010. That's 85010. Type the word studio, leave a space, and then your message. And it'll come straight through to us here in the studio. Get in touch with the show now.
Okay, you're back with me, Ross Hemsworth. You're listening to the first hour of Now That's Weird with my guest, the Reverend Lionel Fanthorpe. Lionel, I've got to say, we were talking before about Christianity. One of my views on the church for a long time has been that the worst thing that's ever happened to Christianity was Christians. So many hypocrites out there. What's your views on this from the stance that you take on a somewhat different side of the fence?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that when criticisms are levelled at the church, I think that the thing that's being criticised is not Christianity, but churchianity. And I'm very much a rebel with a cause, as opposed to James Dean, and I would say that I think we need far more freedom, far more autonomy, and that if you have any organisation, no matter how good its objectives may be in our hearts and minds, there's always the danger of infiltration by control freaks and bureaucrats and people who love writing things like canon law and telling you what you can and can't do. And as far as I'm concerned, as I said, I've never been particularly timid. If I think something is right, then I'm afraid I'm going to go ahead and do it. And if somebody tells me afterwards, oh, Father, you shouldn't have done that, it's against canon law. If it's good for people who feel things and feel emotions, canon law is an abstract written on paper, and you can't hurt the feelings of an abstraction. I put people first. My basic Christianity would be simply this. I believe in the fatherhood, or for those who are gender free, maybe the motherhood of God. I believe that God has a parental aegis over us all, and that as any good parent likes his sons and daughters to be friendly and kind and loving to one another, so all true religion preaches and practices creeds and the regulations and the ritual and the ceremony is very, very secondary. That if you or me or one of our listeners sees a man or woman who is hungry or homeless and tries to do something about it, that's the finest prayer they can offer.
I couldn't agree more. And how lovely put as well. That's nice to hear that somebody's got that opinion. It's very fresh, actually, coming from the church, because there are so many stifled views within the church, I find. It's nice to know that you've got that open a view of the way things are. And certainly the interest that you have in UFOs and the paranormal. I once had a conversation with the Bishop of St Albans, and we were talking about why he felt what I was doing was the occult and the church shouldn't touch it with a barge pole. And I explained to him at the end of the show, I just said, look, just before we finish, I said, do you believe that when you die, your spirit leaves the body? He said, yes, I do. I said, do you believe when you die, that spirit goes on to a better place? He said, yes, I do. I said, then you and I are doing the same work.
Absolutely, Ross. I'm 100% with you over that one. And I said, it is just so unfortunate that one or two of our very traditionalist church leaders who mean well, but for me, their God is too small. And when they don't want to hear about UFOs, when they don't want to hear about the possibility of intelligent alien life on the other side of the galaxy, when they don't want to hear about the possibility that a human spirit which has left its body and moved on, but hasn't perhaps moved on quite far enough, and is causing hauntings and disturbances, this is all part of the same universe that you and I live in. This is as much a part of everyday life as jumping on the number 27 bus to get to work. And, you see, I feel that God is God of the whole vast universe. The wormholes and all the light years and the black holes and all the things which you and I find mystifying and intriguing. And for me, that makes God bigger and grander and more worthy of worship than the God who put Adam and Eve in a garden and told them not to be naughty.
Well, this is true enough. This is true enough. Okay, we're going to go into more about aliens in a little while, because I do want to talk to you about that and UFOs, obviously, with you being president of Bifora. But just before we do that, Knights Templars. Now, this is something, as you know, I've been studying for some time. And just before I actually go into this, Penny's just sent me a message reference what she said earlier. And she said, having scraped the moss off a Templar grave for Ross, can I have Mysteries and Secrets of the Templars, Lionel?
Of course she can. Tell her it'll be my delight.
Super.
Well, it'll be my delight. I'm just making, bear with me 30 seconds, and if I just put to Penny with best wishes.
That'll be lovely. She'd appreciate that.
We'll do that, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, I did some research last year, Lionel, in Scotland, and the research led me to believe that the Templars may not have actually originated in France at all, but that will actually originate, or could have originated in Scotland, with a link to the ancient Chaldee tradition in Perthshire. Now, I know that you've done a lot of research with the Templars, and a member of the Templars yourself. Can you tell us what your theories are, whether there could be any truth in that?
I think there's a very great deal of sense in it, Ross. The way that I would look at it would be along these lines. Like you, I've done a lot of research. And when a couple of researcher pals like us get together, then a great deal more comes out. And, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, because we're able to fill in some gaps for each other and point a way ahead, and for experts among our listeners. My own feeling is that the Templars go back a great deal further than the group who went from France to look for something. And if we were talking in italics, something would be in italics underneath the Dome of the Rock. You see, one of the things that has fascinated me for a long time, the Sinclair family of Orkney, who are, of course, very closely related to all the Scots Templar mysteries.
Exactly.
And I believe that, in a nutshell, there have been people that I would, for want of a better word, call ancient guardians. And I think these good people have gone back far, far earlier than the medieval stories that we have of the Templar exploits in the Holy Land and then throughout Europe. Now, what I suggest, and this this is a scenario on which I'd welcome your opinion, and we have to be open-minded and talk to one another about these things. I believe that way back, perhaps even in prehistoric times, there were guides, guardians, helpers who came from, and again, in italics, elsewhere. I don't presume to say that I know where they came from, but I think that we were certainly guided, we, our remote ancestors, certainly guided and guarded and helped by some very powerful and very able beings, and that they, rather like a teacher putting monitors or prefects into a class, set guardians of terrestrial origin to help us after they'd gone. And I believe that the Templar movement was an outworking of one such group. I think that quite possibly the very earliest Freemasons were as well, and perhaps the Rosicrucians. If we take a number of these, like the Illuminati, we take a number of these societies that had secrets, but were entirely benign and were doing things to keep the rest of us safe. And I think there'll be a common thread. And so whether it's Templars, Masons, Illuminati, Rosicrucians, they are like the jewels hanging on the same chain. And that chain came from somewhere very far away and very old.
I agree with you totally. And the funny thing is, from the work that we've done, there is a direct link between the Scottish King Arthur and the Grail legends around Perth. There's Guinevere in Perth. And I actually wonder whether the early Templars around the 6th century in the Chaldee sort of civilizations around Scone could have actually been what we associate now with the Knights of the Round Table.
I think there's a very great deal in that theory, Ross. I go along with that. And I would also like to put in, shall we say, a peripheral theory to those conclusions of yours in that area, in that when the Arthurian legends began to proliferate, and when they started to spread, and the stories of the various Templar knights and the stories of the Arthurian knights have an awful lot in common. Can we just pick one special sample, as though the Arthurian stories may have been a very interesting and complex code for what the Templars were doing. Now, we think about Roslyn Chapel near Edinburgh and all the mysteries of Roslyn and the over 100 carvings of the Green Man in Roslyn. And then we take the story of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. As if they're trying to tell us something, it's as if they're encoding in Roslyn, which is very definitely strongly Templar influenced. It's as if they are saying to us, this is not to say that King Arthur and the knights were not real, but we have embroidered into the Arthurian knights' stories some facts, some coded truth about what the Templars are doing, and it's all to do with the Green Man of Roslyn, hence the story of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
What a fascinating idea. Yes, I think you could be spot on there. The other interesting thing, Lionel, that I found, when we were doing this research with gravestones, all the early Templar gravestones have on them an egg timer with the words Memento Mori, as I'm sure you're aware, and as were the early Masonic graves. And the egg timer, to me, is significant in time, because Templar, as you know, was Latin for time. Now, I actually believe, and this is an outrageous theory to actually put out live on air, but I actually believe there was a time travel connection here, whether it be spiritual or ethereal, or whether it be in the physical. But I believe the Knights Templars, possibly, as you say, governed by a higher force that was leading them initially, actually showed them how to move beyond dimensions and time.
I think this is fascinating, Ross. And what I was suggesting earlier is that when interested and creatively thoughtful people, those who are not afraid to put forward a hypothesis because they know that the friends they're with will say, that's interesting, but may we consider this, so that people like us and our listeners who are positive and fascinated by these mysteries will build on each other's ideas instead of opposing each other's ideas. And this is where, you know, in the creative process, the whole thing comes from. Mm-hmm. Now, your marvellous idea about the egg timer hourglass and the possibility of time has, for me, another idea. You know, it's a kind of mutual stimulation of interested guys who know a little bit about the same fields of research. You know the Mike Moorcock stories, when he was writing his famous sword and sorcery ideas, underneath the fiction, just as with Dan Brown's brilliant Da Vinci Code, underneath the fiction, there could well be something that's factual and fascinating. And what Moorcock did in one of his stories was to have a being who had somehow splintered through time because of a cataclysmic impact and not splintered through space, so that part of him was living in the Stone Age, part of him was living in the Dark Ages after the fall of the Roman Empire, part of him was in the Middle Ages with the Templars and the Cathars and the minstrels and the troubadours, and part of him was living in the Renaissance, and the last part, the part who was, as it were, putting the story together and linking the others, was in our time, and they were all linked. Now, is it possible that one vast personality, which had, shall we say, suffered an impact on landing, especially if the travel was through time as well as through space, could be living in a sort of multiplicity of times, so that it's not so much a matter of time travel from the Templar 13th century to the Arthurian 6th century, but that the same beings might, in Moorcock's brilliant idea, have coexisted in both.
What a fascinating thought. I'm going to give the listeners a second to think on that one, Lionel, because we need to take another break. But yes, I agree. I think that's a fascinating one. And again, if you've got emails coming in, I know we've got a few queuing up here. Send them in now, info@phantomorfraud.com. That's info@phantomorfraud.com. I'm sure Lionel will be happy to answer the questions. The text number is 85010. Type the word studio, leave a space, and then your message. And we'll be back with Lionel right after these words.